Welcome to the Retail Roundtable Podcast, brought to you by Retail USA. I'm your host, Jesse.
Hey, I'm trying to record a podcast over here.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Retail Roundtable Podcast. For the first today, we have a guest star with us, and we're going to say star because this lady absolutely 100% is a person you do not want to have on a deserted island with you because she will make you look ridiculous. Amy Spoon out of the Pacific Northwest. I don't even know how to explain it. We're going to get into so many different conversations today about how you have created your world in the outdoor space and everything else. I'm extremely jealous because you do a lot of stuff that I would love to do. But honestly, I'm not man enough. And you absolutely do this on your own, probably with a support system. But anyway, I'm more than honored to have you on today. And actually, our first time meeting face-to-face over this, welcome to the Retail family, number one. We're super excited to have you. But the podcast itself, this is our first female guest star we have.
Awesome. I like to be first stuff. So that's pretty cool. But yeah, awesome to meet you.
You as well.
Virtually. From the West Coast over here. So yeah.
We're physically
pretty much as far away.
I was going to say we're physically as far away from each other as we possibly can be at this point.
Yeah.
So Amy, I alluded to it a little bit. Let's just dive in. Cause I want everybody to get to know you a little bit better and your background, where you came from. And I don't even know if you're from the Pacific Northwest, if you're from Iowa or New York City. So give us kind of a rundown real quick. So people get to know you and how we're going to kind of walk through this whole podcast here.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. No, I born and raised in the town that I live in right now. I live on the coast of Washington. Yeah. I grew up here, grew up on the Wainuchi River. So I was kind of like bred, born into just living the area here. And there's so much stuff to do around here. Like I'm in a very target rich environment. So from fishing to hunting, there's just so much. I'm lucky that way. So the stuff that I get to do, just it lends itself well, just due to where I'm at. But yeah, born and raised in the town I live in still right now. To University of Washington after high school. Went to college in Seattle, so I did live a little bit of the city life up in Seattle for 4 years.
Okay,
that was enough for me. 4 years was good.
Came back home, a little different than home,
It was very different from home. Yeah. So our population here in our town is about 4,000 people. So quite a jump. Yeah.
Because you had 4,000 people in your English class, probably.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. But good experience, but made me appreciate what I had back at home for sure. Absolutely. So
now, is this something you've done your entire life? Have you grown up hunting and fishing?
I grew up, so I had the luxury of, I'm an only child, and my dad was a big time waterfowler. Like that was his thing. So I got I was exposed to hunting and fishing pretty young, whether I was a part of it or not. I got drug out, you know, no babysitter. So my dad drug me out with him to the blind, and I would sit in the blind as a child, young child, just enough to blow on some calls and play with dead ducks and stuff like that. But I had a blast. Like I loved it. The hot chocolate, things like that. And then my mom was super into fishing. So I got like the fishing side for my mom and the hunting side for my dad. But big game stuff, I didn't really start till kind of like after college. That was something I kind of got into myself.
Right.
My mom and dad weren't into big game hunting. So that's kind of something I took on myself. But yeah.
Definitely. So, and obviously being in the hunting and fishing world as you are, does one take precedence over the other in your world? Would you rather fish than hunt or hunt than fish or back and forth?
It's flip flop for me quite a bit. I'm kind of before meeting, my longtime boyfriend that I have now, I was kind of like self-taught with everything kind of, I wanted to do it. I kind of figure it out for myself kind of thing. Which takes a lot longer to become proficient at some things, but in meeting him, it totally opened my world into new opportunities. And he's taught me so much and exposed me to so many different things. Super appreciative of that. But if you would have asked me maybe like 5 years ago, I would have said hunting over fishing for sure.
Yeah.
Now it's like really 50-50. It's two different, it's kind of two different things for me. Hunting's pretty serious for me. It's, I mean, deer hunting and elk hunting, you kind of get that one chance a year kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more serious. Fishing for me is just like fun. It's like that super, whether you catch anything or not, it's still fun and relaxed. It's not stressful like hunting is for me. So, yeah, it's just two totally different things, I guess.
No, that's awesome. But, I guess on the fishing, let's start in the fishing world because we Brian May, mutual friend of ours, Brian does a great job for us out on the West Coast. And you know, the guys from Don Coffey are rooted fishermen, right? They are offshore guys. They're inshore guys. They have fly fishing specialists all over the country. And me personally, we don't come from a fly fishing background world over here. Now, granted, we do have some of the most historically great fly fisher men to ever come out of Maryland within Lefty Cray, right? So Lefty I've met and known a lot in my life, and my granddad and him are friends and all this kind of stuff. So I was introduced to fly fishing as very early in life, but never really got into it till later on. You do a ton of fly fishing? No, because I see both kind of fly and spinner out there. And what is kind of the main thing?
Yeah, I do not do any fly fishing where I'm at.
Okay.
I'd love to do it, but I think it's a whole other thing that would like consume me. I think if I got into that, but I just have never gotten into fly fishing. And
gotcha.
So, it's definitely on my list, but personally now I'm
conventional tackle, spinning rod, things like that.
Yep.
Gotcha. So what are your target fish out there? Cause I see some pictures and I'm like, I don't even know how those fish are in that body of water.
Yeah. And like I said, that where I'm at, I have the opportunity to go. I mean, I live 30 minutes from the ocean.
Right.
I have in our rivers here, but like right now, or I guess I should say my all time favorite thing to fish for is winter steelhead. That's my hands down number one thing. If I could only fish one thing in the rest of my life,
nice.
It would be that. But yeah, we have salmon steelhead, which, fall salmon is going strong right now. It's just starting. It's a little bit slow right now, but it's going to be picking up here really quick. But even right now you could be tuna fishing still here.
Right,
so, which is really cool. That's a fish that I super, super love. It's a lot of fun.
You know, a little bit about offshore fishing over here. So we've a lot of bill fishing, you know, Ocean City is the home of the White Marlin Open. A lot of big money fishing going out of Ocean City and in surrounding areas. And if I had to pick one, I would probably chase tuna as well. Cause I like to eat. So,
That's one fish. Sorry. That's just one fishery. I totally push on people if they haven't tried it to get out there, and people kind of don't realize that feasible it is. Kind of out here, we can do these 1 day trips. Sometimes people think that you have to be out in the ocean for days on end, but we can do these 1 day here. Yeah.
Yeah. One hitters and kind of get back in. So now you're fishing mostly in fresh bodies of water. So streams, rivers and stuff like that. Are you doing a lot of boat fishing, or are you doing a lot of wading and stuff?
We do both. We usually bust out our drift boat. Our home rivers are, you know, the Wainuchi and Sassup, which have been, a lot more people have been, out and about. So it's been getting a little frustrating, out on the water with people, but that's all right. I mean, it is what it is, but yeah, we do a lot of fishing. We can go up north and jump on some new river systems that we don't do regularly in the northern part of the peninsula. But we're kind of 50.
Gotcha. Okay. So let's look, we're right on the cusp of all the big game hunting, all of the waterfowl seasons coming into it. Same question back to you, because I just want to get a kind of a profile of people, understand who you are before we get into the fun questions of like how in the world you got to this position that you're in. Big game or waterfowl?
I gotta go big game.
Yeah.
I do.
Okay.
Yep.
Elk, deer.
Probably my favorite thing, I'm crazy for it, but is black-tailed deer.
Okay.
If I had to pick one thing, it would probably be black-tail. And that's just, they're just this a mature blacktail. People have seen big blacktail, but until you've seen a real true trophy mature blacktail, it's just being able to see one, let alone harvest one, it's a huge deal. And
awesome.
We just have them here, and it's a really hard animal to hunt. But I just super appreciate the challenge, and it wears me out every year, but I'm looking forward to it.
So what is the black, because you're coming from a guy who has, we have whitetail everywhere, but we also have a particular deer called Sika deer. It's native, not native to Maryland, but it's the only place you can find them wild in the U.S. So what is the geographical range of blacktail?
Yeah, so you're going to be looking, so the western, and there's also different subspecies of blacktail. Like the blacktail in California are going to be different than our coastal blacktail here in Washington. But you're looking like the, like we have I-5 that runs north and south all the way from Washington down into California and stuff. But the true western blacktails that I love are on the very western coast of Washington State here and Oregon. Yeah, or some really big ones as well.
Gotcha. What is a mature blacktail?
I mean, you're looking at, I have a couple in here. I mean, if you're, let's see, I want to say for book for Washington State for like 130, I want to say.
So not your 200 inch or anything like that.
No, but that's the other cool thing with Washington is we have blacktail, whitetail, and mule deer all in the same state. So you can hunt for all three species in the same state.
Yeah. Are they on the same seasons and all, or like, is it like one blacktail, one mule deer, one whitetail? Yeah,
you get one deer regardless of species per year, but yeah. So you got your whitetail up kind of in the northern, northeast part of the state, mule deer kind of on the eastern side.
Yeah.
But the seasons are pretty much the same, depending on we have draws and things like that too, that you can hunt outside of the general. Yeah.
Awesome. So you're probably saving your one tag for blacktail then.
I am this year. Yeah. Last year I drew a special permit, and that was mule deer focused, but this year, I'm back to blacktail focused for sure.
Nice. Okay, cool. So when we were introduced to each other, the first time was actually through a waterfowl hunt that you went on, and I believe it was a snow goose hunt, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. And I heard it was a banger snow goose hunt.
It was super fun. So that's the other thing too, is we can travel to the east side. Well, we have snow geese hunts here on the west as well, but got to go over to Eastern Washington, which was the first time I hunted snow geese here in Washington, which was awesome. But that was earlier in the year with Brian and all those guys. And it was super fun. Being in a blind with those guys is awesome. Like
their trip.
It's always a good time. But yeah, no, we had a great, it was a great hunt.
Probably as much fun after the hunt, knowing those guys.
It was. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. So what you're really getting down to is that waterfowl is semi new to you as well.
It's I'm getting back more into it. So
gotcha.
I did a bunch with my dad kind of up until like in high school years. And then I kind of got out of it, during high school and college, and then, really started trying to get more back on a regular basis as much as I can. We definitely struggle with access around here. We have a ton. I mean, we have some killer phenomenal waterfowl area here in the flyway we're at in the Chehalis basin, but I mean, everything is leased up beyond belief. And it's really hard, which is a shame because it's a super awesome sport. And it's one of those ones that getting new people into hunting and, you know, kids and being able to take them out there, you know, it's one of those things. It's not like deer hunting where if they miss or you know, you lose that one chance, there's always going to be more birds coming in.
Yeah, so the sitting in a tree stand for 8 hours and possibly not even seeing anything doesn't really get a lot of people fired up.
Right. Yeah. So it's kind of a bummer that we, it's an issue, but we also have a ton of, tidewater that you can hunt, which is also a cool thing, but that's, you know, it's also another layer to it. That's hard for some people, but definitely getting into it more though.
Nice. So we've actually had this conversation a little bit, and we're going to talk to a guy from Onyx here in a couple of weeks, but are you in Washington State, do you see a lot of public ground that's not accessible, I know in the mid, in the, well, I guess in Montana, Wyoming, you know, those areas are seeing a lot of that right now, where a lot of their public land is landlocked.
Yeah, we do have quite a bit of that. And yeah, you can go on Onyx, like you're talking, and see those parcels, see those big tracts of land that are, right, you know, behind stuff, which, yeah, it's no good. But yeah,
no bueno. Yeah. And look, coming from a world where we have, don't get me wrong, we have a little bit of public ground, right? If it's nothing. And, mm-hmm, and you know, look, there's more public ground in the state of Montana than there is, you know, surface size in the state of Maryland. Right. So we can't even imagine what it is. And for me, not being really on the West Coast very often, it's gotta be interesting to know that you have all this public access, but you can't get to it.
Yeah. We have some of that. We do have quite a bit, you know, available, but yeah, there are those cases. And we also have a recent issue that's come up over the last, I don't know, maybe it's been 4 or 5 years ago or so. We have a ton of industrial timberland in Washington and Oregon. And in Washington recently, it used to be totally open. Like sometimes the gates would be closed, but you could, you know, access behind using bikes and things like that. Or, you know, more times than not, it's, you know, drivable. You can access that. But they created a fee system, which was definitely not a good move as far as hunting wise. The hunting community definitely attacked the timber companies over creating this basically fee for entry. Oh, but wow. I mean, it is what it is now. I mean, you know, they were dealing with super, like, a ton of dumping and, you know, wood theft and things like that. So it's understandable, but that's another issue that hunters are facing too over here, right, is pretty much paying to play, which seems like it's
never
just
fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. So unfortunately, we're very familiar with that aspect of it. So we joke about it a lot. You know, it's not even a joke anymore. I mean, there's literally single pits in Maryland. Historically, we kind of do, we have the originating places of waterfowl hunting, right? So we have the Chesapeake Bay. Mm-hmm. We have all of these different little towns that were built off waterfowl hunting. Everyone in these towns, you know, are guides, or they're an inn for, you know, lodging and stuff like that. Right now, we have single pits that go for $10,000.
Whoa.
Okay, so in those single pits and those single fields, by the way, we're also at a one bird 30-day season in geese right now. So we have a modified moratorium, and this comes back to guys who are, you know, paying to play, and they're all outfitters, and they're running, you know, multiple parties a day through these blinds. But, you know, when you're talking 10 grand to get a single pit, that takes a lot of people out of the equation. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess I shouldn't complain much.
No. Well, it's all relevant, right? Cause you know, it's something that we're all dealing with, and the same waterfowlers, they're having issues in Arkansas that we're having in Maryland, that we're having in Minnesota, and then in Washington State. Right now we all have access to things. And I think sometimes we also kind of like steer away from really trying to find it, but at the same time, we're all on the same boat here. And whether we're through, you know, what are we, 3,000 miles away from each other, we're dealing with the same things in the hunting community. So that's why it's so important to me to have you on this podcast for a lot of reasons. We don't have a very strong female support staff as far as hunting goes in our area, in our region. And that is probably pretty common across the country. But what are you seeing on the West Coast? Are you seeing a lot more female hunters? Are you seeing more people getting involved now that we're kind of on the downslide of COVID and everything else?
Yeah, I see. We have a pretty, I mean, and maybe it's just, you know, it could be just I'm a little bit more plugged in, and with, you know, social media is such a big tool for people to, you know, expose themselves, putting themselves out there. So you see it more. But we have a pretty great group of, you know, female, I would, you know, I could call them outdoor ambassadors.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing some really cool things out here. And I think it's really opening the doors for getting new females into the sport, whether it's hunting, fishing, any of that. We have a really good female presence in the hunting world and fishing world here in the Pacific Northwest, I would say.
Awesome.
And that's kind of something to be proud of if it's not the case everywhere, but I definitely can see it in the Pacific Northwest, which is awesome.
Yeah. So I figured we'd wait a little bit to put you on the hot spot of this one, but I got to go ahead and ask. One of the things that everybody – plays back to, it's one of the conversations that everyone has in the outdoor industry, whether it be hunting or fishing. It's the female huntress or the female the female ambassador to a fishing company, right? The reason that we work with Amy Spoon, the reason that we like that you're a part of our family is because you're outdoors first, right? And you're about getting people involved. Are you, and trust me, we're not going to start the conversation. We say a lot of things on this podcast that probably spark a lot of people's interest, right? Or at least gets a conversation started that might end up in an argument. We're not sure. Doesn't really matter to us because we're all here for the same reason. Do you think it's detrimental for a lot of these especially younger girls thinking that they can get into the outdoor space easily with the image that they're putting out? Or do you think it's something that, hey, you know what, at least they're bringing some attention to the outdoor space?
Yeah, there are the true blue outdoorsmen, whether you're male or female, but I'm specifically Absolutely. Talking about female, and you can see it. Like, you can see who's who. You can tell. And it's a shame because it does, but the thing is, some people don't see it. And you just get lumped into to that other crowd, which
exactly
is really frustrating. Yeah.
This goes for guys too. Trust me, it's not just a female thing. I had one today that we ran through the office, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing on Instagram when they contacted us. All right, like it was so just cringy, the message that we got from a guy about his following and everything else, and it's just like, come on, man! Like, you know, it's not a good look when you reach out to somebody and you have these, like, you know, 15-year-old bro pics everywhere. Like, I get it, and everybody's trying to make their space. Dennis and Billy, we had them in studio last week, and we were talking about people getting into the outdoor space and the ambassador programs and all this stuff. I hate the word ambassador. I hate the word field staff. I hate all that. A pro, by the way, everybody. PSA: pro is short for promotional staff.
Promotional, not
Nobody
professional.
Nobody is professional, right?
No.
Like professional baseball players. Yes, you know why they're professional? Because there's a league set for them to play in, and they get paid a lot of money for it. Yes. No one is a pro out here. Even guys who think they're pros, guess what? They're just another guy who may get a little bit more money paid to them to have an advertisement on their show, whatever it may be. But but jumping back to this, and I didn't want to get you so far into a hole where you had to crawl out of it. But I hate the fact that you, and I think you said the best, lumped in, right? Because what you do and what we have seen the introduction we had to you is like, whoa. I mean, honestly, she's probably more of an outdoorsman and or women, however you want to say it, than most of the guys that I know.
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you mentioned that about that it happens with males as well, because 100% cringy. It's obvious that it happens with females, but it just gets talked about with females more. Correct. People don't really bring it up with males, so thanks for bringing that up. It's one of those things. You gotta earn your stripes, but you have to do it. So it seems like this happens. It's a perfect example. Every blacktail season, usually when I go out, I have the place that I'm gonna go out and kind of focus on for the year. You know, and I will be the first one out there, the first one in. You know, I'm hiking or biking or walking in quite a ways, and you know, you run across a male way out there, and they're kind of, they're taken aback. They're like, "Whoa, right. what are you doing out here?" And and it takes a good 4 or 5 days of them running into me again, me beating them out there, me putting in the miles, putting in the time, and they're kind of like, "Oh, okay, she's in the in group."
She's legit, and that's a tough thing. And I hate that we've gotten to this point, because it's almost like you have to extra validate yourself. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's not fair in any means. And we can go down a long road of the equality in the outdoor world, because I think it's absolutely not, it's not on a good space right now, because you can go through any, and a lot of fishing, especially, I don't know if a lot of people have ever caught tuna before, but guess what? It does not look like that on a tuna boat. Once you start gaffing tuna, there is blood everywhere. It is not, it's chaos. It's controlled chaos when you get into a bunch of tuna and you see these like perfectly done up pictures of people. And it's like, you were nowhere near that when it happened. But like, but for you though, like you put up a reel the other day, it's you and your dog out pheasant hunting.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's been my, since Pheasant has opened, that's instead of taking my dog on a morning walk around our town, we've hit the pheasant fields That's every awesome. Morning for our walk.
So, which, by I mean, the way, yeah. I'm completely jealous of that.
Oh, man, you should be. We have so in Western Washington, we don't have a natural population of pheasant. We have pheasant release sites scattered okay. around. Yep. So I'm lucky enough to have one of those just right across the freeway from me. So it's nice. Literally four minutes away, and me and my dog go for a walk and
awesome.
Get a pheasant here and there. It's pretty, yeah. It's
so
pretty
is
awesome.
Is that run by the state of Washington then?
It is. Yeah. There's an additional, like $82 pheasant fee that you pay to add to your license, and it covers
I pay that
the,
in a heartbeat.
Yeah, no, it's great. I'm going to, this year I'm keeping track of the amount of meat I get, and I'm going to see what that $82 got me
per pound,
by the end
yeah.
of the season. Yeah.
No, that's awesome. So this, and we can only, you know, really compare it to the state of Maryland, where we pay like a $5 lottery to maybe have one day on like one release site.
That's, oh, wow.
That's sponsored by the, you know, and this is other, I love hearing about different programs around the country because it's something that we can ultimately take back and be like, hey, by the way, you pay this. And look, for me, I'd pay $100. I'd pay $200. Uh-huh. You know, so let's set these sites. We have plenty of it, especially, you know, the CRP land that the state of Maryland has and all that. So we could take a page out of that book because it sounds like an awesome program.
Yeah, no, it's great. I love it. And it's great for us too, because we're just right here. So all the people definitely come on release days, and it's like, you know, it's parking lot looks like Disneyland, but any other day we pretty much have the whole thing to ourselves.
Right. No, that's pretty cool. So is it there's still a quota, obviously, like there's a daily limit.
Yeah. We, two either sex.
Okay. One and one, or is it can be two hens and two roosters?
It could be, it could be two,
oh, cool.
two either. Yeah.
Yeah. Are they seeing, and this is, man, this is me just being an upland nerd because I don't get to do it very often. And when I, and I have, a lot, so it, me personally, I'd rather chase turkeys than do a lot of things in the world. Upland hunting, if I had more access to it, it'd probably take all of my money and I'd have a divorce, honestly, because I love upland hunting. But is it a, you know, I guess the real question would be, is it taken to the point to where it's overpopulated, or is it like you're actually seeing a resurgence in native birds? Not when I say native, I mean, you know, is there a population resurgence at all?
I think so on the east side, I think yes, we do have natural populations over on the east side, and it's really big over there. We have and Fish and Wildlife also has a ton of feel free to hunt areas over there, which is super awesome. We have it on the west side as well, but it's super beneficial for upland bird hunting over there, the feel free to hunt areas.
Yeah. Any quail or anything like that in there too? Or
yeah.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Awesome. Feel free to hunt, man. That's a great program.
Yeah. It's so
everywhere
yeah,
around here,
landowners.
It's like, you know, do not ask for hunting permission. It's pretty much all the signs. So feel free to hunt. That's cool. Very good. So I guess moving back out of this, because I do want to follow up with this, because this is kind of the meat and potatoes of this conversation.
Sure.
You know, you grew up in it, right? What and we have some stellar female outdoors personalities at this point, because we're actually seeing them grow into a little bit more than just a ambassador or pro staff or whatever. They're developing kind of a following of their own. Mm-hmm. Whitney Varney down in South Carolina, her and her now fiance, he literally runs an offshore charter boat. They fish all summer long, and then they do not spend any minute outside of work not hunting during any hunting season. Right. And then you have Kathleen Blanks, who actually is just she's a real estate agent down in Texas. Her and her husband, Hollis, Hollis is a dog trainer, and they have created this little world of their own down there. And she's a killer, by the way. I mean, she just killed an elk the other day,
nice.
on her own. I think they were in Colorado. Maybe it was snowing, so it could have been Canada. I'm not really sure, but, you know, we're seeing a lot more resurgence now of the female demographic inside of the hunting world. What would you tell if there's a girl listening to this podcast, which I hope there is at least one, and maybe she's younger and maybe she's looking to say, look, I want to get in this the right way. What would you give her as far as of inspiration? I can't, right? I just fell into this thing and I'm too ugly and it is what it is. I don't even put my pictures up. But like, what would you give her to say, look, there is a path for you to be in the outdoor industry, but there's a right way and there's a wrong way to do it. What would be your right way?
Yeah. So, there's definitely a spot for everybody. And for people, especially if people are wanting to work with companies, I think, just getting out there, for the first thing I would say is just do it. Don't be afraid. You're just know going into it, you're going to have pushback from, you know, from the male community. as well as the other thing is just, and just be ready for it. But you're also going to have pushback from the female community too. You know, there's haters no getting hate. Around it. Haters are going to hate no matter the gender. And sometimes if they're hating on you, you might be doing something right. Exactly. So, yeah.
I'm glad to hear this from your perspective, because, and I'll be honest, this is my take on it or whatever. You've pushed past this. You validate, like I said earlier on, you validated yourself, and it sucks that you have to do the extra mile of it, but like you validated everything as far as, you know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about you knowing what you're doing.
Yeah. And that's the thing is, and you just know stuff like that's coming, but just do it anyway. As far as like even working with companies, the biggest thing I could say is like, you got to build a relationship with people first before, I mean, yes. you probably get this all the time. You can't just call up a company and be like, hey, can I have some free stuff? Like you gotta have something to offer. And the thing is with that, it's a mutual thing. It's not just a freebie. You got to give to get, as well as you got to be able to work with a company that's willing to, you know, provide for you as well. It's a relationship, not just a handout. Right. And some people kind of just don't get that.
Yeah. Once again, that goes both ways, guys and girls, right? Because like I said, there's some absolutely unbelievable messages that we get from people who say, well, hey, you know, I'm a big deal in my area, right? Well, can you send me a gun? Well, that doesn't really do anything. We don't have a relationship. We don't know who you are. And, you know, for us, and this has been an ongoing process, you know, like I said, meeting you through Brian, It's everything works for us, right? Because at the end of the day, we still have a product to sell. We still have to get, you know, mm-hmm. it's marketing. It's everything wrapped into one. But the biggest thing for me is to know that not only the person that is representing your brand is doing it well, but they're doing it right. So, and I think we appreciate that from you, because it is, you have represented Rite as a brand that you're utilizing in the field and you're using it, not just taking pictures with it. So thank you.
Yeah, I know. And that's the thing, getting in and having a space in the hunting and fishing world, you know, social media wise. I mean, there's an easy way to do it and the right way to do it. You know, you can take off as many pieces of clothing as you want, and it'll get you probably in the eyes of a lot more people. But in the long run, that's, you know, is your freezer full?
I'm glad we aired this out, because I think it's something that makes it hard. And once again, it's made it another difficult hurdle for you to jump, I'm sure, because there is a lot of that out there, right? There's a lot of, picture takers. And like you said, doesn't matter how many, whatever skimpy bikini you can wear on a fishing boat doesn't make you somebody who's a captain of a boat, right? We understand that. But I think that if we get to a point in the outdoor community that we're focusing on the thing that matters, which is actually hunting and fishing and progressing, you know, what is something, I guess for us being here, it's totally different because we're in our own little world, but like, have you ever done any women programs at all? Have you helped with a group of women? Just the other day in Wyoming, one of our reps, Zach Epstein, did a complete pheasant hunt with a female group who came out, and I believe most of which was their first introduction to hunting.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, actually I did. It started off as a Facebook group, quite a while ago. I want to say 9 years ago. Nice. I started a group, and it just because, you know, this is my lifestyle. Like you said, if I'm not working, I'm doing something outdoors. That's my free time. And posting pictures, there were so many questions, and people are always asking, you know, how do I get into it? Where did you go? Who did you go with? Or how did you do it? And so, it's also getting new people, especially females, their exposure to new things is basically with their husband or their boyfriend, and they're either getting yelled at, or doing something wrong. And so, I started doing these women's groups, and we started out with a lot of fishing trips. So we would do some offshore fishing, which is really cool. Yeah.
More accessible.
Logistically putting together female fishing trips is a lot easier than female hunting trips, which we've done. We did a snow goose hunt in Missouri, which is really cool. Right. Group of us from all over the country got to go meet up in Missouri. So that was really cool.
Awesome.
But we do tuna trips, offshore fishing. We climb Mount St. Helens pretty much every year. Wow. But I'm super proud of that group, and the people that I've got to meet off of it. And the biggest thing that I'm proud of with that is I'm now seeing people that have met on those trips, now they're like hunting buddies, like lifelong. Oh, cool. They're going to Florida gator hunting together, right, right. Or they're going somewhere together, but you know, they met on those trips, found somebody that nice. Kind of lives close to them, and now yeah. they're now they got a hunting partner.
That's awesome. So it's not just a once a year and then maybe throw a Facebook message back and forth to each other. So it's actually, you know, and guys do it the same way. We talk a lot about, you know, maybe meeting a new buddy at a boat ramp or something like that in the morning. And I'm glad you guys are doing it the same way, because it would be harder. And this is just, I guess this is just evolution as a whole. If you rolled up with a boat and me and two of my buddies were there, it's probably going to be an awkward conversation to be like, you want to hunt with us today?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like for us, it's kind of like back and forth too. And I think this is the navigation that we all got to kind of find. And guys, listen to what she said. Number one, don't be the guy who turns off your girlfriend or your wife or your cousin who's a female because you try to be Mr., you know, sassy pants out there in the duck hole, or you have yeah. to, you know, yell or scream or whatever about missing a deer or something. Guess what, buddy? There's going to be other opportunities, but you may have ruined the lifetime experience for that one person. So.
Yep. Yeah. There's two different ends of the spectrum there. It's something, you know, if you don't want your wife or girlfriend to go with you, that's one thing. But if you would appreciate them yeah. being out there with you, there's a way to do that too. And,
absolutely.
But yeah.
Yeah. My wife, I bring her up a ton about this, because I call her a cul-de-sac girl, right? That's where she grew up at. She knows no hunting or fishing or anything. and honestly, it was like first time she'd ever seen a gun was when she came to my house for the first time. But it surprised me during COVID. She, you know, look, if she wants to spend more time with me, normally it's going to be because she needs to be with me hunting or fishing, right? Because I spend a lot of time doing that. And now my son's at the age now where he's tagging along a bunch. He's only five, but you know, he's wanting to be a part of it. She's seen kind of the writing on the walls here. So she went out and mm-hmm. got her hunting license.
Nice.
Untouched. I never said a thing to her about it. I just figured like, and this is on me too, because I never encouraged her. I never pushed her to do it, because I was like, oh, great. Like, she's not going to go out here. Like, none of her family comes from it. She knew nothing about it. But then as an idiot, I'm sitting here like, my wife just went and got her hunting license and didn't say a word to me about it.
That's awesome.
It is awesome, but it also made me feel like a jerk.
Yeah.
So
well, now and then now you're gonna have to buy two of everything. That's,
well,
that's yeah. like that's our household. It's
yeah, our expenditures in an outdoor hunting space just got a lot more yep. frugal. But and the same goes for our kids, because I tell you, my little girl's three. She's got a killer instinct already.
Nice.
And she is not afraid to get her hands dirty. My little boy the same way. He loves it. He's actually turning into be, you know, a pretty cool little outdoorsman himself. He's so interested in everything, but you know, for my daughter, it's going to be a great, and this is once again, this is, I wanted to use this time and not only to meet you, but kind of get this across to everybody. If your daughter is sitting there at home and you think that, man, she doesn't want anything to do with this, you may want to offer it, because it might surprise you.
Yeah, for sure. And what I see too, the hunting and fishing females that I know, you would it instills a sense of, especially if you're doing some things on your own or you're making things happen for your own, like the, right. the amount of self-confidence that it gives you, being able to one, provide for yourself, provide yep. for your family, just being able to accomplish things like that, even just trying the things. It's something that, you know, girls lack self-confidence a lot, and it's really hard, and it sets them up for, you know, a really hard time in life. But what I see from the female hunting and fishing community that that are out there, I mean, self-confidence is a huge thing, and you can definitely get that through hunting and fishing and, yeah. and doing all those things.
Yeah. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think my wife, I know my wife is way tougher than me. She has been through a lot with our kids, and she takes care of, she's a teacher, by the way. So she's with kids 24 hours a day. So she leaves kids and comes home to the kids and everything else. I think there's also like the sense of like, she could be better than me at this. I'm serious. Like really, I mean, when given the chance, I mean, now it's really hard for us because it's also tough to get a babysitter at 4 a.m. when you're trying mm-hmm. to go hunt. So we haven't even been able to go down that road right now. But at the same time, you know, I've seen and I've met a lot of women who are fantastic hunters.
Yeah.
And fish and the fishing side as well. It's just yep. getting the opportunity. So I'm glad to see that you forefront this for a lot of people. And I'm excited to be able to tell your story on our platform and get more people to understand that, like, look, this, yes, is it a male driven thing? 100%. Is it something that has to be male driven? No, it doesn't.
Right. So. Yep. And that's the thing, providing those spaces and those opportunities for females to like come out with a bunch of other females that one or A have either never done it themselves is awesome. And then also B, doing it alongside somebody that has done it for a long time and being able to learn and ask questions from them. I've just really enjoyed putting those trips together and just providing that space for people to just,
Well, it's a comfort.
Go out there and try it.
It's a comfort thing too, right? Because you're not going to be with a bunch of, just pig-headed guys who are literally like, oh, well, you do it this way, right? There's going to be like you in specific. I'm sure there's that it's probably a lot easier to convey information when it's not some, 6'5" bearded dude sitting there telling you about it, right?
Yeah.
So,
and you'd also be like, also a huge thanks to the guides that I'd use when I do that. It's great. They are so good to the girls. Like I have this core set of guides that I always take ladies out with, and they're just amazing. And that's the other thing. Sometimes the women are a little bit nervous, going out with a male guide and whatever. They just make them so comfortable, and that's it's awesome.
Yeah, and that's this is obviously two-parted of a conversation, because not only are we all in the same boat of trying to revive the hunting culture and the fishing culture and everything else, without the implementation of more females in the industry. And I wouldn't say the industry, cause that's a broad space, but in the outdoor world, whether it be hunting, fishing, camping, hiking, whatever, we're losing people at a rapid rate. So whether we pick up a guy off the street or a girl off the street, we're slowly losing our culture.
Mm-hmm.
So,
with license sales going down and stuff like that, it all circles around and as a detriment to the resource. And,
So, and look, like I said, the business side of me is like, if we have a resurgence of women in the outdoor space, that's good for the outdoor industry. Right. And that's what I was trying to kind of get to talking about product. I'm the first one. I preach it. I talk about it all the time. I'm a 20 gauge guy. Okay. I'm also 6'3", 260 pounds, and I shoot a 20 gauge. Not ashamed of it. A lot of people, and I get a lot of kickback on this one. They're like, well, yeah, my daughter shoots a 20 gauge. Well, guess what, Donnie? I shoot a 20 gauge because it ballistically is better than a 12, I believe, right? So for you moving out there, what is your, and now obviously you got a nice little show up as far as for your pheasant season coming here, but 20 gauge or 12 gauge, what have you been grown up with? What have you learned on? What are you currently shooting?
Grown up with, and currently 12 gauge. But Brian did just about like, as well as, I think it was your guys' last podcast. Whenever this airs compared to the last one, but just this last one, you as well, definitely just about talked me into going 20 gauge this year. Just like, I'm like a hair away from it. But,
people are probably tired of hearing me just spill about the 20 gauge world, but the 20 gang, right? So that's what I'm trying to build, the 20 gang. I'm a firm believer in it, but I also want to take the stigma away from that. It's a kid's and a woman's gun, right? Because we're on the same levels and same path at this point. So.
Nope. I agree.
Yep. So for you coming up this year, you guys are getting ready to kick off. When does your season start? So are you on the big game side first, or is waterfowl kind of kick off first for you guys on the West Coast?
It's pretty much, so I do archery elk, which was the first part of September. So that came and went. I was unsuccessful for that. Is it archery elk?
100%. Won't do anything else. Had an opportunity 2 years ago to go kill one with a rifle. Won't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I'm same way. I can't, it's such a zoo out here come rifle elk hunting season. I don't do it. For me, I love archery elk hunting. So that came and went. Like I said, I'm pheasant hunting right now. Waterfowl and deer season kind of kick off around the same time, mid-October. Okay. So those are coming up right around the corner.
Yeah, yeah. So in the spring, I've also seen you chase the old gobbler around too.
Oh man, this last spring was so fun. It was awesome. Yeah. I'm getting more and more into turkey, and just because I like elk hunting as well, and people make that relationship all the time.
It
totally is. I love it.
Yeah. An elk's just a giant turkey with horns.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I had so much fun. We went to the east side. It was great.
A beautiful Merriam, by the way. I love the look. I mean, obviously I'm an Eastern guy, and the Eastern bird has been, you know, what I've grown up on. Now in my availability to travel a little bit, you know, I've killed the Rios, I've killed Merriam's. Now I would say that that pound for pound, Merriam's are the prettiest bird out there.
Yeah, they're gorgeous.
They
yeah.
are. Yeah. So tell us about that hunt, because I knew it was a pretty fun one.
Sorry, what was that?
I said, no, tell us about that hunt, because I knew it was a pretty fun morning.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, well, I ended up with two birds over there. The first one happened so fast, I was kind of bummed that it happened so fast, but I was going to take the opportunity. So this was literally our drive over. We get to close to where we're staying. And it's kind of cool. It's on the, it's near the Columbia River, runs all the way from the West Coast, and it runs and basically, separates Oregon and Washington for a little while. It's kind of the border. And then it runs up the kind of the middle of the state and goes clear into Canada. But we're in the northeast section of, Washington here. And so we're driving along the river, and I see this bird just strutting out there on the riverbank, and I'm like, are you kidding me? So I get out my Onyx and I'm like, can we get down there? Can we get, is this like public or what? And so I bust out the Onyx and I'm in the truck and I'm like, man, we can walk through here and get down there. How cool would this be? And so we find this little sliver that we can walk through between private, which was awesome, and kind of just sneak up on them, and they kind of just work their way right to us. And that's just awesome. Opportunity. I was still in my like leggings and running shoes. And so it was kind of just a bird of opportunity, but it worked out.
That's so cool. So now, did you grow up turkey hunting as well?
I did not. So no. I didn't do a lot of turkey hunting until really, when I got into, Brady and I kind of just started getting into turkey when we were spring bear hunting.
Oh, cool.
If we were to draw a spring bear tag, we kind of just did that all in one trip. And nice. So it's kind of been a new thing for us, but that's
polar opposites too. Jesus.
Yeah. So it's like, quickly becoming one of my favorite new things that we've gotten into. Nice. Though.
I like to refer to it as the refined person's hunt. I love turkey hunting. And honestly, like I can't wait. And we're just getting ready to kick off waterfowl and everything, but I'm already thinking about turkeys.
Yeah.
So it's, yep. that's where my mind goes and drifts off to.
Yep.
Yep. So no, that's pretty cool. So really, what else, as far as, you know, going into this year, do you have any big like hunts planned, or are you guys going to be hunting locally? I know a lot, and that's kind of the question to a lot of guys right now with the economy the way it is, with fuel prices the way they are, and everything yeah. else. Are you going to be kind of centralizing yourself around home, or are you going to be planning to drive to, you know, Kansas?
Well, we drew Montana for deer. So that's in the works for November. And then I have some, goose hunts just kind of around the state, but not too, too far away. So kind of sticking within the state other than Montana. We didn't really draw anywhere else. So we're kind of sticking to home. Nice. Other than that Montana thing. And then just, yeah.
Montana's not too far for you guys though, right?
It's not. No, it's just go through the panhandle of Idaho and we're right there. So
oh, cool. Some of the most pretty country I've ever seen, by the way.
Oh man, I can't. Yeah. I love it.
I went through the Galatian Pass this year. On some road trips that we were traveling, and actually when we were in Livingston, Montana is when the Yellowstone washed out. And so we were kind of stuck. We had to go back up and around through the Galatian Pass, and it was some of the prettiest country. And I was thinking the whole time, I was like, I can't be mad at these guys now who are in shape when they hunt, because there's no way I'm making it up that hill. Like, there's a reason why these guys are out there working out all summer long. It's because I would die in the first 500 yards. Because look, we got flat ground. We can just roll a golf cart or roll a side by side out and we're gone, right? And we can go anywhere we want to. That is some of the most rugged, treacherous world that I've ever seen in my life.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's scary.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I go and do draw a tag and end up, you know, this elk hunt comes into fruition, I'm going to probably need to start out like working out now.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be a bonus. It'll help you out.
Definitely. So, all right. So real quick, let's kind of get to a point here. We're going to wrap up. I want to go through and kind of tell everybody where they can find you at, because I think it's very important. Number one, that people kind of check in with you and see what you're doing, because you have an awesome life going on right now. What is your day job? We didn't even get to that. You were talking about work and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, so actually I work for the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife.
Well,
so
that
it's
helps
kind
as
of,
well. Jeez.
I mean, it's kind of the full circle thing. I knew I wanted to work for, we have a regional office right here in my hometown too.
Oh, cool.
And from the time I was in high school, I knew I wanted to work there, and
really?
Here I am. So kind of dream job.
What is your position with them?
If you say a
game
warden,
we're all out.
Nope. No. They're good guys.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah. So I'm actually the assistant regional habitat program manager for Region 6, the coastal region.
Oh, cool.
It's a tough job to describe, but the short version is anytime there's any kind of work in or near the water, you have to get a permit through Fish and Wildlife.
Gotcha.
Which basically we make sure that you're not killing fish or harming fish habitat.
That's
so
awesome.
We kind of run that program.
Very cool. So now, are you guys doing rehabilitation in those programs too? Is it mostly just kind of overseeing the construction work and everything?
It's writing the permits for that, overseeing the construction, but a lot of the projects that run through us are big restoration projects. So
nice.
We have our hands in a lot of restoration, not just, you know, putting up bulkheads and putting in bridges and things like that. We do get to have our hands in the water for some restoration work, which is really great.
That's awesome. So, man, I've got so many more questions now. So on that, you know, I came from the construction world. So in the state of Maryland,
okay.
we have the Chesapeake Bay, which everything is honestly sediment erosion control. We have a ton of, you know, bay buffers and really our entire lives revolved around stormwater management. The craziest thing I've seen over on your side of the world, all of our rivers run south. Your guys' rivers run north. Blows my mind how that even works.
They go pretty much any direction.
Yeah. We were on a body of water. We were fishing. We actually were fishing in Montana, almost in Wyoming. We spent a day on the Snake River, and I looked at the sun at one point, and I had to grab my bearings, and I was like, are we going north? And he's like, yeah, why? And I was like, I've never seen a body of water in my entire, because everything for us runs from the mountains and runs south. It runs down. It runs to the ocean, right? For you guys, it is. So I'm guessing that your world of control over there is like 10 times, because not only like for us, when they write a construction plan, they're like, well, as long as you got protection on the south side, you're good. For you guys, it could be anywhere.
Yeah. Our dewatering plans are pretty involved.
Yeah, I bet. Cheese and crackers. Well, that's awesome. Well, that's a side note conversation for everybody too.
Yeah,
we're going
to
have that one, but maybe we do like a project check-in with Amy too.
There you go. Yeah.
I would love to see, you know, obviously it's just a total different landscape over there from what we're used to in the Southeast and in Maryland and even in the Northeast. So I would love to see what you guys have going on, because it is some pretty ground that you live in for sure.
Oh, it's beautiful. Yeah. I appreciate my job even more for the area that I get to do it in, for sure.
Definitely. Well, your office isn't that bad, I'm sure, because it's probably pretty picturesque at all times.
Yeah.
So are you in is it mountain base for you guys? And this is just me being a cracker jack from, you know, the Eastern Shore of Maryland. Is it mountain and coastal water? Is it pretty close?
Yeah, Washington State is super weird. We have a rainforest, we have desert, we have mountains, we have pretty much everything. But yeah, on the coast here, we have the Olympic Peninsula, which is very mountainous, rainforest up there.
Rainforest.
What
can you hunt in the rainforest?
So that's where there's some big Roosevelt elk in there, which is,
really?
It's pretty cool. Yeah.
Is it gloomy and rainy there? Is that kind of your guys' thing?
Yeah, that's kind of the stigma for our area. We do get quite a bit of rain, but I mean, this year has been not the case. We haven't had rain in so long, and we're not forecasted to have rain pretty much all of October. It's been really warm and dry, but overall, yes, we're known for having pretty gloomy skies and a lot of precip.
That's awesome. Well, good deal. Look, there's so many things we can talk about on this one, and I'd love to have you back on, kind of get a mid-season update from you, but tell everybody where they can find you at, all your social medias and everything.
Yeah. So, social media, it's pretty much at Amy, AMY underscore spoon, SPOON. Pretty much find me anywhere with that.
How about your Facebook page, your women's Facebook page?
So it's called the OCC Adventures.
Okay.
and you can find me there. And I post the trips when they get announced,
awesome,
on pretty much everything. And so, and I'm always open to questions. It's great that people, I'll post something and people, females shoot me a question really fast and, hey, what was this? And it's great. And I'm super, super open to questions and I'll give you all the information I have.
Absolutely. You live it, you breathe it. We're super excited to have you part of our family, 'cause we've always talked about it. We're not an ambassador group. We're not a pro staff or team, whatever. You're a part of our family. We love to have you. And, it's going to be a really cool ride. 'Cause one of the things that Hunter and I, producer Hunter and I, have already started talking about is kind of some video updates from your area. We'd love to be able to kind of show that and even document some of the these larger group outings that you guys are having as well.
Awesome. Yeah, for sure. I'll definitely provide you with whatever I can.
Sweet. Awesome. Amy Spoon, the real deal. No joking about it. I can't say any more about it. I'm in awe with what you do. We're always talking about it in the office here, and just, you get to live a really cool life. Your job sounds absolutely awesome. You keep on doing what you're doing and we appreciate you.
Perfect. I appreciate having me on the team for sure.
Of course, of course. All right, we're going to wrap it up. Jim Caesar.
Okay.
Take us out of here.
Raising the South, I come up from nothing, I figured it out. They say when I sing, I'm the voice of the South. Give thanks to the Lord, 'cause I'm making it out. I can't believe I'm living my dream. Early morning flights, the skies are filled up with these whistling wings. Sights that dreams are made of. Look at God's creation. Dust coming in as we struggle to load. Kid number two is a hell of a load. Shots going off as they drop in the hole. It's so cold and my car keeps sticking. I'm being precise with the notes I'm picking. My lead is true, so no duck, I'm missing. Full choke, so I'm good at a distance. I shoot a retake. Brush up the blind, ain't wasting no time, yeah, we gotta grind. Get in the trees and bring a few digs and pass them to me. Ain't no Beyonce, but these ducks in formation. This ain't no heist, but I swear, green's what we chasing. Hey, yeah, I'ma drive a boat in the morning. Can't think, can't see, can't breathe, 'cause the cold and the spark. Two strokes and farthest. Start up your engine, get ready to party. It's a dangerous run to the hole. You know where I'm from, so you know how it goes. 25 mercs and 25 zoos out. Boar spit smokes when it's cold. This is a timber run, something like timber run. Dodging these logging these trees. Running so fast like we racing for cash in the water. So cold and it's starting to freeze. Could you believe? The sight that you see with your eyes when the matter descend through the trees. My soul is at peace. I get so high when the ducks start to fly. I can see what the angel can see. Please do not blame it on me. The ducks don't permit, then we rearranging the deeks. Come on, let's turn up the heat. They still ain't committed, then we got a motion to deeks. Block swinging left, block swinging right, but keep them in sight. And if we not doing it right, no second chance, and we just might ruin the flight. We kicking water, ducks dropping harder, tell them kick hard. When him gave in, but still got 10, working circle, got me nervous. Ain't no stress, we on the X, watch them banking, swerving, curving. We gotta finish these ducks, they coming in, watch them run straight out of luck. I'm yelling, take them guns, I'm blazing. 1 + 10 came in, amen, that's a whole lot of mallards. Now one left out, we screaming, shout, one shot before man limit, I won't forget it, yeah, yeah, yeah. Now we headed back to the ramp, ducks in the bow of the boat, chest sticking out like a champ, chest sticking out like a champ. Yeah, 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 yeah. Raising the South, I come up from nothing, I figured it out. They say when I sing, I'm the voice of the South. Give thanks to the Lord, 'cause I'm making it out. I can't believe I'm living my dream. Early morning flights, the skies are filled up with these whistling wings.